Senate Foyer Appointed, United States Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims is now in session. The Honorable Robert M. Davis presiding. All our business before this court draw near, you shall be heard. God bless the United States and this honorable court. Please be seated.
Good morning. I am Judge Davis. To my right is Judge Sholin, and to my left is Judge Bartley. We're here today in the matter of Cupamala against Robert A. McDonald, Secretary of the Department of Veterans Affairs, case number 14-2449. Would counsel for both parties please note your appearance for the record?
Good morning, Your Honors. Landon Overby from the law firm of Chisholm, Chisholm & Kilpatrick, representing Mr. Cupamala, and appearing with me at counsel table is Jenna Zellmer, also of the firm. Thank you, Your Honors.
Ronan Morris on behalf of the Secretary, and with me is Deputy Assistant General Counsel Christopher Wallace.
Welcome. Are both parties ready to proceed?
Yes, Your Honor.
Yes, Your Honor.
Each party will have 30 minutes to present your respective arguments. Mr. Overby, would you wish to reserve a portion of your time for rebuttal?
Your Honor, I'd like to reserve 10 minutes of my time, if I may.
Mr. Overby, you may proceed.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. The Court has posed three questions. The initial question, the answer is yes. The Board of Veterans' Appeals has the authority to award an extra schedule rating and to review the director's adjudication granting the extra schedule rating. The scope of that review, similar to with any other case, is de novo. The board erred here when they simply adopted the director's adjudication of granting an extra scheduler 10% rating.
Mr. Overby, do the cases Anderson and Wages offer any guidance?
I think they do, Your Honor. Anderson speaks to the board's authority to review the actual director's adjudication of an extra scheduler, whether it's denial or an increase. Anderson dealt with the denial of an increase or increased extra scheduler, but they still had the authority to review the director's adjudication of that extra scheduler. Wages speaks to that the Secretary, it's similar because we're just dealing with the two different regulations. One is 4.6, 16B. The director still makes that decision under, for extra scheduler purposes, for unemployability, whereas here we're dealing with 3.321B1. And so Wages spoke to the board's ability to review, and that review was de novo.
The Secretary makes a distinction between the type of exercise that the Secretary has to engage in 4.16B as discussed in the agents, and 3.321 is in this case, that in the first one is just unemployability, but here they have to actually assign a new rating, and that is somehow significant. What's your response to that?
Well, the director is, in fact, either awarding or denying an extra schedule rating, and they look at a number of factors. So the Secretary has argued that about the average impairment in earning capacity, and essentially what that is, the Secretary has already established that through the rating schedule. That's what speaks to the average impairment in earning capacity. The regulation itself goes a little bit further and says that when the rating schedule, the average impairment in earning capacity, is not contemplated, then the director may award an extra schedule rating. There are no standards or factors that the Secretary utilizes, to my knowledge, because it's not spelled out in the regulation, but the regulation itself is to accord justice here.
So if there's no standards or factors, how does the board review what the director has decided?
Well, the factors are, they're looking, for example, the director's decision here looked at frequency, which wasn't contemplated by the rating criteria, so the frequency of the bowel movements. There are other factors that exist that Mr. Cupamala suffered from, for example, stress, low back pain, concentration problems, mental or memory problems, and fatigue. So those would be factors that the board could actually address, and they just did not do that here.
How is the board to decide that those additional symptoms, if we assume that the director did not consider them, how much additional of a rating to give to Mr. Kugelbaum?
I think the best way to look at it, Your Honor, and if I may, so for example, the criteria for evaluating mental disorders under Diagnostic Code 9400 and going through, there are different criteria. And for example, as I mentioned, Mr. Kupamala experiences memory impairment, concentration impairment, and so certain rating codes under that, for example, you can get a 30% or a 50%, when those actual factors or those residuals that are not contemplated by Mr. Kupamala's case, Diagnostic Code 7329, so it could be an additional 30 or it could be an additional 50, but I don't think that it could go over a Schedule 100 because then we'd be actually dealing with special monthly compensation.
Does the director have a reasons or bases requirement?
I think the director, in making the adjudication, would have the reasons or basis requirement. And, in fact, the director did issue an adjudication here explaining why they're granting the additional 10%. It's no different than a regional office, agency of original jurisdiction adjudication of a veteran's claim for benefits.
Mr. Overby, in Anderson, the court addressed the board's review of a denial of extra scheduler rating. Is there a basis for distinction here?
I don't see any basis for a distinction. The ultimate thing is the board has the authority to review and review whether it's a denial or a grant and review the basis for the director's decision. So the board, they looked at the director's decision here and simply summarized what the director did, speaking to the frequency of the bowel movements, but didn't look at anything else. And that's where the board erred, because the board is supposed to be conducting a de novo review, especially in light of the Federal Circuit's decision in DAV, as well as the statutes, 38 U.S.C. 7104.
What about the delegation?
I'm sorry?
What about the delegation from the secretary to the director?
That's for the director to make the initial adjudication in the first instance. It has, in Floyd, this court held that the director has to be the one making the initial adjudication of the extra scheduler rating. Didn't prohibit the board from reviewing that decision. The board erred in that case when they actually jumped ahead and they granted the extra scheduler rating. So the board has always long thought that they had the authority and the ability to grant an extra scheduler rating.
If we were to agree with the secretary's position, would we have to overrule Anderson to do that?
If you were to agree with the secretary's argument, this court would have to go en banc. But I think the secretary's argument even runs counter to his position taken in the general counsel opinion that the board does have jurisdiction to review these decisions, these adjudications by the director. And that was in the 6-96, paragraph 11. It's for those reasons that the board should have engaged in the process and considered the factors or the residuals that I mentioned, and the board just didn't do that here. And it's for that reason that the court should set aside the board's decision, remand the appeal back to the board so they can address all the evidence and consider whether or not Mr. Kupamala is entitled to a further extra scheduler rating. If there are no further questions. Thank you, Your Honors.
Good morning, Mr. Rowan.
Morning. Thank you, Your Honors. May it please the Court. Your Honors, the decision whether to award extra scheduler evaluation is ultimately a policy-based decision, one that, by the plain language of the regulation and by practical necessity, is left to the discretion of the Undersecretary for Benefits or the Director of Compensation Service and is not subject to review by either the Board or this Court. And there are four reasons that compel this. The first, Your Honor, again, is that it is ultimately a policy-based decision, one that's made in the interest of justice. Second, and regardless of how it's characterized, there are no manageable standards under which to review the propriety of an award of an extra scheduler valuation. Third, the plain language of the regulation makes clear that there are only two entities within the department that are authorized to approve an award of extra scheduler benefits, those being the Undersecretary for Benefits and the Director of Compensation Service. And fourth, and perhaps most importantly, subjecting the decision by the Director or the Undersecretary for Benefits to review would render the regulation unworkable and in violation of Section 1155 and in conflict with statutory Section 7252.
Mr. Ronan, let me ask you the same question I asked Appellant's counsel regarding Anderson and Wages. I take it you don't find those opinions instructive in this context.
No. I believe foremost that the four points that I just spoke of do address those questions, but more specifically, Wages, with all due respect, is I believe, easily distinguishable. And 4.16b is distinguishable from 3.321b in several respects. Foremost, again, is the issue that a 3.321b assessment is a policy-based decision. And I recognize that the Secretary had advocated a similar approach in the Wages case, but the Court found that the operative language in Wages actually, it's the established policy of the Department, actually referred to the essentially the policy leading to the promulgation of the regulation itself. In 3.321b, the language to accord justice has been applied by this Court and the Federal Circuit in respective fund cases to the individual director's decision. And thus, as the Federal Circuit has expressed, once a matter is referred to the director, the final step is for the director to determine whether an extra scheduler evaluation is warranted in the interest of justice. And in the interest of justice is clearly a policy-based decision. So again, on that note, it's easily distinguishable from Wages. Beyond that, the subject matter is very different. The question of whether a veteran is unemployable is essentially a black and white one. Can the veteran work? And if not, is it the result of a service-connected disabilities? And that is something that can be answered by the agency itself, by the regional office or the board, as reflected in subsection A of that regulation. Here, a 3.321B analysis cannot be. The board cannot make the findings necessary to an analysis of whether an extra scheduler evaluation is warranted. The board has no way to determine the reduction in earning capacity caused by a disability. The board has no way to determine the average reduction in earning capacity caused by a disability, and the board has no way to translate that average reduction in earning capacity into a percentage rating. And this is precisely what's required of the assignment of an extra scheduler evaluation under 3.321B.
I'm interested in your citing of 7252, because doesn't that just refer to the rating schedule?
Yes, but and again, that's I did not mean to to suggest that it would be in direct violation, but it would seem to undermine the spirit of, at the very least, the spirit and principles of that, because effectively what the director is doing is the same process engaged in when the director is creating the rating schedule itself and assigning the percentage ratings.
But this is called extra schedule. So why would the rating schedule, that means outside of or beyond the schedule. So a statute that is directed towards the rating schedule itself, it just doesn't seem to be, doesn't make any sense to me that you're citing 7252 here when we're talking about extra schedule or something beyond schedule, and you're saying, oh, this statute that deals with the schedule and the fact that we can't review it is somehow relevant.
Well, I do believe that there are some principles that are at play in both assessments, the creation of the rating schedule, the assignment of the ratings itself, as well as the director's determination, because ultimately they are the same thing, the only difference being that one is contained in the rating schedule, the other, which is appropriate only in the extremely rare and exceptional cases, it is simply a disability picture that did not make its way into the rating schedule. So the analysis is the same. When the director assigns a percentage values in the rating schedule, he's engaging in the same policy considerations that he's engaging in here, which is, again, an assessment of average level of industrial impairment caused by a disability, translating that into a percentage disability rating. And so, again, in that sense is why I brought up 7252, because, again, it is a clear example of an area where Congress expressly prohibited consideration by this court or review by this court. But I don't. But I would agree it's not the point that I'm truly trying to rely on, because I think that there are other points that make the Secretary's position much, much clearer.
Well, as to your characterization of Part 3 of FOON as a policy judgment, and it sounds like what you're saying is because the regulation is preceded by these words, in the interest of justice or to the court of justice, that transforms it or that makes it a policy type calculation. Can you just go into that a little bit more? Because
yes.
The fact that it's kind of individualized here, even though it's compared to the average impairment, takes it kind of out of policy realm to me.
I use the word policy because, again, whether something is in the interest of justice would seem to be most easily characterized as a policy decision. What justice is a policy decision. And with respect to that language being at the beginning of the regulation, it was this court and then the Federal Circuit that expressly recognized that that language applied to the director's decision. So if we look at the Thun elements, the first two lead to the referral to the director. And then once the claim is in front of the director, it's the director's job to determine whether an extra scheduler evaluation is warranted, quote unquote, in the interest of justice. And that was the Federal Circuit's language. So again, it does appear that this certainly relates to the specific individualized decisions. And it's consistent with the regulation itself, the purpose of the regulation. And it's also consistent with the underlying considerations that go into it, which, again, are ultimately these policy assessments as to the percentage requirements, average industrial impairment caused by a disability. And, again, these are matters that the board cannot review.
But how do we overcome the language that says that all, you know, debates and that the board reviews all the questions of the, you know, questions that are, you know, that are in the statute? This is clearly a matter that pertains to veterans' benefits, so wouldn't they be binding and that the board be able to review
it? Two responses. First, these cases must be read or should not be read in a manner that would impose an impossible burden on the Secretary. Second, the board's review is from 7104A is derived from 511A, and 511A does speak to questions of law and fact, not policy-based decisions. Beyond that, this court has recognized that there are otherwise general exceptions. One of them would be, for example, in Worden v. West, when the court recognized that matters that are left to the discretion of the secretary and for which there are no manageable standards are simply matters of discretion and are outside of the jurisdiction of the board. And
is it the jurisdiction of the board or the
jurisdiction of the court? I believe Worden was the board's jurisdiction. It was the board's ability to review the distribution of special adaptive housing grant funds, and that it was the regulation itself, much like this regulation, that actually created that discretion. And appellant's counsel himself has conceded that there are no standards, and there are no standards. And where there are no standards, you simply cannot impose judicial administrative review and then judicial review, because, again, and I think responding to the questions that the court posed, doing so, permitting or requiring the board to conduct an analysis of an extra schedule evaluation or to review the director's decision would put the board in the impossible position of having to provide a statement of reasons or bases on a matter that it has no basis to make that determination. The board
Well, so what are you saying should happen here? Now, let's kind of start from step one. This is the only issue before the board. Is that the thing in this case?
The appropriate rating.
Yes. What should the board have? And I think, if I'm not mistaken, the board only addressed the extra scheduler element here.
I don't believe that that's...
Did it actually go through D.C., the diagnostic code? Okay, but what should... I guess my question is, what should happen? If this was the only issue, and if the only argument that the appellant presented dealt with, hey, you gave me an extra schedule at eval, but I deserve more, what should the board have said? Like, we have no jurisdiction... Should it have said we have no jurisdiction? Just one sentence decision? Should it not even... Should this issue, once it became clear that this was the only issue before the board, should the board somehow have said, hey, we're not even going to issue a decision here. You can't even appeal this issue. I mean, what are the steps that should have been taken?
There are likely several scenarios that, or things that the board could have done. Where the entire rating claim is before the board, the board satisfies its obligations, it satisfies its reasons or bases obligation by acknowledging whether there is a director's decision. The board has to explain the basis of a rating. The basis of the rating is comprised of the board's assessment or de novo review of the scheduler aspect of that and the board's recognition of the director's decision on that. So again, when a...
Why doesn't the board have the ability or the expertise to determine whether the director actually reviewed all the evidence, for example? If we assume the appellant is correct, that the director only focused on one or a couple of the symptoms, the frequency, but didn't consider the fatigue, having problems, et cetera, et cetera. Why would the board not have the ability to do that kind of review?
With due respect, there's no requirement because at the end of it, the decision by the director is a policy decision, and there's no standards to review that. The mere fact that additional symptoms exist does not mean that the veteran's average impairment in earning capacity caused by his disability is any different than that contemplated.
Does it really mean that it doesn't mean that the symptoms cause more disability if the director did not consider.
That's correct, but Your Honor, at the same time, even if we look at the face of this regulation itself offers no guarantee. In fact, it does not even provide a right to an extra scheduler benefit under that. It's simply an authorization for two entities within the department to authorize or to permit an exception to what the law otherwise requires, that law being the rating code that Congress mandated the Secretary to create and apply. So there is no right of entitlement to an extra schedule benefit. To the extent that there is, it would exist only after the director determined that one was, and that would be consistent with this court's decision in Thun. There's no requirement for the director to, nor would there be. There would be no requirement, for example, there's no requirement that when the board engages in a scheduler analysis, that the board explain the basis of why, for example, a 40% rating is associated with criteria X, Y, and Z. And this would be imposing the same obligation on the board or the director in the context of an extra scheduler evaluation.
But what if the director says something that was clearly factually incorrect? An outright error.
The system of...
Let's say they granted a 10%, as they did in this case, the director granted a 10%, but went on further to say, and because the veteran evidence is no fatigue and no concentration problems, et cetera, made clear outright factual errors. If this is a non-reviewable decision, what recourse would the veteran have?
With due respect, the recourse is simply not with the Board of Veterans' Appeals or with this court. The recourse, to the extent that there is one, would lie ultimately in the democratic process. I mean, Congress can change its law. And again, Congress is simply...
Doesn't that take us back to 1988, counsel?
With due respect, this
Judicial Review Act was passed?
This regulation was promulgated long before judicial review, and at a time where the rating schedule itself was very much incomplete. Much has changed, but the Secretary's underlying reasoning, his reason for promulgating this regulation, was ultimately one of effectively of equity to accord justice in individual cases where the rating schedule, where the law otherwise does not require anything more than what the veteran receives under the rating schedule.
Would this court have to overrule Floyd and Anderson? Do you agree with your
I don't believe that it would, and I don't believe that it would for several reasons. First, I do believe that these cases need to be read in a manner that would not impose impossible burdens on the board, and in a manner that's consistent with statute. 1155 being, I think, the operative statute, which requires that these ratings be assigned based on average industrial impairment. And this court and the Federal Circuit have recognized that that doesn't change with the extra scheduler component, that the extra scheduler component is based on the precisely the same factors because of 1155. Permitting the board to assign an extra scheduler evaluation or review the director's determination as to the appropriate evaluation would render these assignments arbitrary. Because, again, the board doesn't have a basis.
Nonetheless, in Floyd, the court said that the board couldn't assign it in the first instance, implying that it could assign it in the second instance.
I believe
in Anderson, we said that all three parts of the Dunn test were reviewable. So
and I
don't understand how that first part of your response is actually responsive.
Are you suggesting that we can distinguish those cases somehow?
Yeah. Yes, I believe that much like any other laws, they must be read consistent with the statutes and the other binding laws. I believe that Floyd did suggest the possibility of the board review, but I don't think that it was necessary to its holding, nor do I think that it actually did. I think that Anderson is also distinguishable. And foremost, Anderson did not consider any of these arguments. Anderson cited Floyd for the proposition that all aspects are subject to review. Floyd didn't consider the policy aspects of the director's decision. Floyd didn't consider the actual analysis that the director undertakes. Anderson certainly did not either, and Anderson also cited 511A and 7104. Those two statutes, so again, Your Honor, with due respect, they would not seem to apply to policy-based decisions. So again, to the extent that Anderson might have suggested this, I don't believe that it must be read that way. To the extent that this court deems that it must be read that way, then the Secretary would submit that this court should convene en banc and review that decision in light of the Secretary's position here and in light of the fact that it is impractical, it is impossible for the board to do what the appellant is suggesting in this case.
Counsel, you have made a strong point regarding the policy nature of this decision from the director. And as I read the record and note the board's statement, in fact, the board noted that the director based his award of an extra scheduler rating on a number of factors, the frequency of the bowel movements, the interference it caused with Mr. Kupamala's work as an X-ray technician, the inability to work alone, the need to leave patients to use the bathroom. And the evidence of record reflected that there were additional factors that should have been considered. And so as I look at the record here, none of these are policy reasons. They're factual. And isn't this a factual determination rather than a policy call?
A few responses to that. And the first is, again, the director doesn't have an obligation to provide this information. Had the director, there is no requirement that he do so. And so if the director's language is inartful or if the director is not engaging in the fullest analysis possible, it should not be an issue because, again, the director doesn't have to do anything more than make a policy decision. Beyond that, the director in this case, he left out a critical part of the analysis. But again, he's not required to provide that because ultimately what the director's decision by law must come down to is whether the average impairment in earning capacity caused by the veteran's exceptional disability is greater than the average impairment in earning capacity assumed by the percentage scheduler rating with which he is assigned, and in the interest of justice, an additional rating should be provided.
Okay, but in the interest of justice, shouldn't it account for the full aspect of Mr. Kupamala's symptomatology, even if that may or may not add to the rating schedule or add to the rating that he's assigned? Shouldn't the core justice and the veteran be able to know why and how the director made a decision?
Your Honor, should have to accord justice, again, is a policy decision, and policy decisions, the wisdom of them, are not supposed to be second-guessed. With due respect, the regulation itself is clear, and I understand the desire to impose restrictions on it, but the regulation is clear as to what it is, and the analysis that the director is required to take is clear as to what it is.
Adding the regulation, does it say that the review that the director does is improper or extra jurisdiction?
The regulation on its face does not create an entitlement to a benefit. The regulation simply permits, as a last matter, for two entities in the department to create an exception to the law. The law being the appropriate scheduler rating that a veteran is assigned. And so it's inherent to the regulation itself that that's what it is, that apply the rating code. And Congress, clearly, that is all Congress required. Congress created a system of ratings based on average industrial impairment. Inherent to that is the recognition that veterans will be overrated and veterans will be underrated in terms of the monetary benefits that they're receiving. So there was this level of unfairness built into it. The Secretary recognizing, too, that there were some gaps in the rating schedule, that there would be these extreme events where a veteran's disability picture would be different than that which is contemplated by the disabilities recognized in the rating schedule, that there would be these times for the director where, in the interest of justice, as a matter of equity within the Secretary's authority to create equity, that the director should consider these. And if the director determines that justice requires an additional award, he's simply authorized to approve it.
Well, it occurs to me that the real problem here, or one of the problems, is that you seem to be essentially reading 3.321B1 as a decision that is separable from the claims process. And what happened in Cupamala and what happens in most cases is that the 3.321B1 process is part of the claims process. That is, the veteran can deserve to get a rating decision after the 3.321 decision. And the statute provides that for a rating decision, reasons must be provided. Is that in 5105 or whatever? I forget what the statute is. But so, you know, reasons have to be given. And then there are appeal rights, and you can appeal, and the board has to give reasonable basis. And you seem to think that the director's decision is essentially a standalone outside of the normally required procedures of the claims process.
With due respect, that's not the position that I intended to convey. The decision on an extra schedule basis is certainly a part of the claims process, but the relevant fact that the regional office must consider, the relevant fact that the board must consider, is simply what the director determined. That is how it is a part of the claims process. It is not an adjudication that the board is required to engage in, nor, again, is it one that the board can engage in. Because, again, requiring the board to do that would lead to remands in perpetuity, because the board would never be able to explain the basis of why the average level of impairment caused by a veteran's exceptional disability picture is not is the same as the average level of impairment contemplated by the percentage rating that he's assigned. The board simply can't do that. So again, imposing any type of additional requirements on the board would simply render the regulation unworkable. And it would render it, ultimately, again, in conflict with 1155, which requires, and this court has found and the Federal Circuit has found, which requires that even in the extra scheduler basis, that the ratings be based on essentially the same analytic formula.
So Mr. Ronan, your conclusion then would be that the board conducts de novo review based on the record, with the exception of decisions by the director. On extra scheduler, I should be clear.
Correct. The only relevant fact in the record with respect to the board's assessment of extra scheduler consideration is the fact of the director's decision. And that is all that's required by 7104D1, is the material issues of fact and law. The fact is the director made this decision, this policy-based decision, this decision that it has no standards under which for the board to review. So that is the fact relevant to the extra scheduler component. Beyond that, the record is the traditional reasons or basis requirements that the board has to engage in. But the ultimate question to be asked is, does the veteran understand the basis of the rating he's assigned? Yes, because the board explained why the rating schedule does not require a higher one, and the board explained that the director made this determination. The reasons or basis requirement does not extend down towards a decision by the director of compensation service.
I just want to clarify what you said. You said the board tells them why they're not entitled to a higher schedule rating, and then they explain why they're not entitled to a higher extra schedule rating.
No, simply that the director did. So Mr. Kupamala understands the basis of his rating because he understands that 50% was warranted under the rating schedule, and because the director assigned in the interest of justice an additional 10%. And that's what's required by 7104D1, and again, 7104D1 being derivative of 7104A, I mean, there is simply no requirement, there is no extension of that reasons or basis requirement to the director, nor is it possible for the board to engage in the type of analysis that the director is engaging in to review it. So,
would this have been easy for Congress to say the board reviews de novo the record except for decisions made by the director?
But even still, again, the ultimate determination is one based on comparisons of average level of impairment. Something the board doesn't create the rating schedule, so the board would be guessing as to the average level of impairment caused by, for example, a 40% disability rating. And the board would be guessing as to the average level of impairment caused by the veteran's exceptional disability picture, and the board would simply be guessing as to whether it should award a higher rating, and that would be entirely inconsistent with 1155. Congress can change the process. But this process, again, has existed from the very beginning, and this is the only way that it can. So when the regulation is being interpreted or understood, it should be considered in that light, that this was a regulation that was created in the 1930s. This was a regulation that was created effectively to accord justice as on principles of equity, something that Congress didn't require.
So the additional evidence in the record that the board did not note, namely things where the record reflected that Mr. Kupamala suffered from a loss of appetite, from loss of sleep, stress, fatigue, memory, concentration problems, and low back pain. Those are irrelevant under your analysis.
Yes, the director is not required to explain the basis of it, of the director's decision. So again, Your Honor, I understand the director did say some things, but if the logic is if the director said less, then we would have no problem. Then again, that what the director said can't be relevant. The director doesn't have to say anything more than yes or no. And to the extent yes, what should that rating be?
Would your argument be stronger if the director had simply said award for 10% and nothing else?
Yes. I mean, to the extent that there would be nothing, it wouldn't draw these types of questions. But again, the end result is the same, because all the director did have to do was make that policy decision, and that's what he did. That policy decision is what the board cannot review, and the board cannot be forced into that situation where it has to do the impossible.
You mentioned the age of the regulation, and it's been out for a long time. Should we draw any sort of inference value from the fact that the agency has not changed the regulation subsequent to this court's decision in Floyd that said the board couldn't assign it in the first instance, or this court's decision in Anderson that said that all the elements were reviewable. The agency didn't say anything like that, didn't put out any guidance, didn't change the regulation, didn't issue a new manual provision.
I don't believe so, because I do believe that the regulation is clear in what it does. The secretary wanted to accord justice where the rating schedule was inadequate and where justice required a greater rating based on a comparison of average levels of impairment. There's no requirement that the secretary do provide standards in its regulations, as recognized in Worden, that the secretary can create discretionary decisions. And the secretary has done that. The regulation is clear that there's only two entities that are authorized to approve these benefits. And again, the Secretary's position is not only derived from the law, from the language of the regulation, but if nothing else, from the mere impossibility of applying this regulation in any other way. And to the extent that this court finds that the board is required to do something that it would be impossible to do, the court should simply invalidate the regulation at that point, because again, it cannot be sustained the way that the appellant is arguing. And I see that my time is moving down to one.
Your time's expired, but hold on. Let me make sure there are no other questions. All right. Thank you, Mr. Morris.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Your Honors, I'd just like to follow up on a few points, especially your question, Judge Davis, about the review, and that Congress could actually do something with the statute if they wanted the extra scheduler ratings not reviewable. Mm-hmm. They could put that in the statute. They didn't do so. Another area, 503, this is not equity. This is not equitable relief. They have a statute that gives the Secretary the authority to grant equitable relief. That is not here. The Secretary doesn't even cite to that as the authority for the regulation. So ultimately, though, it would be untenable to adopt the Secretary's position because, as you mentioned, Judge Stevens, the Judicial Review Act. Congress thought of that, and they wanted veterans to have the right to have their decisions, the adjudication by the regional office, all the way up to the Board of Veterans' Appeals, to be reviewed. We are here in this courtroom today because the board issued a decision, but they didn't address all the factors, as I mentioned in my opening. The board needs to address those factors and consider whether or not an extra scheduler rating is warranted, more than that's already been established.
Now what about, Mr. Overby, Mr. Morris's policy arguments?
The policy is the regulation. The policy is the guidance to get a decision in the first instance to the director, and if the director either grants or denies, to still have the board in the process, because that's what 7104 says. And if it were in fact a policy, there would be a lot of veterans' names probably listed on this adjudication. It's an individualized adjudication in Mr. Cucamala's case. It doesn't apply to all veterans across the board. The secretary, the director, knows how to do that with training letters, FAST letters that, for example, FAST letter 1313 that said that a veteran does not have to file a notice of disagreement when TDIU is denied so long as an appeal is upcoming through the process for an increased rating, for example. So it's no different than that. There are FAST letters that the secretary or the director can issue. That wasn't done here. This is an individualized decision for Mr. Cupamala's case, and the board still hasn't addressed all the factors, and that's why the board's decision should be set aside and the appeal remanded to address those factors.
But one of the points that Mr. Morris made was that there were no manageable standards in this policy decision by the director. In your estimation, what does the director base the decision on then?
I think here in these circumstances, the director looked at the rating criteria, which set this for 40% rating for 7329. The director certainly didn't look at the average impairment in earning capacity because there's no mention of that in the director's adjudication. But what he did look at was one factor, and that was the frequency of bowel movements. He didn't look at anything else, and the board didn't look at anything else. And the board, in accordance with wages, shouldn't be adopting the director's decision merely as evidence.
But isn't there one, or is there, a factor that guides the director's determination regarding an extra scheduler assignment?
Yes, that's where the rating schedule does not contemplate the veteran's symptoms. And that goes along with Thune to say when, for example, the 40% criteria, there's a basis, the channel to get it to the director to address other things that are outside of it. And as I mentioned, with respect to stress, memory impairment, concentration problems, fatigue, the board clearly can look to that, and we've seen it in the past. As a large law firm that practices before the agency, I know it's not in the record, but we see the board grant extra scheduler ratings based on the factors that aren't actually addressed in the rating schedule. So it's the average impairment earning capacity defined by the rating schedule. Anything beyond that, you can look to outside areas, as I mentioned, the mental disorders, to see, does Mr. Cucamala fall into a 30%? And that could serve as the basis for an extra scheduler rating.
Looking at 3.321B, the director is authorized to approve on the basis of the criteria
set forth in this paragraph, an extra scheduler evaluation commensurate with the average earning capacity impairment due exclusively to the service-connected disability or disabilities. And then it goes on, the governing norm in these exceptional cases is a finding, which sounds like fact-finding to me, that the case presents such an exceptional or unusual disability picture. Does that sound like policy to you?
It's a regulation that needs to be applied to individualized veterans cases such as Mr. Cupamala's, and even to the point where the scheduler evaluations are found to be inadequate, so you look to other factors, and even the marked interference with employment and frequent periods of hospitalization, those aren't the only two factors. They look, the director can look to evidence and the board can look to evidence, just as the board has done for decades now, reviewing decisions of the secretary. There are no further questions? Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. The case is submitted for consideration. The court will now come down and greet counsel.